spanking someone and letting that be like, okay, we're going to dinner now. Mm-hmm. And like it not ending in kind of penetration or not ending in everybody ejaculating or coming at the end. It's like, no, those things are like building tension, and tension is so fucking sexy.
Hi, my sweets. Before we get into this week's episode, I am wearing my newly designed hoodie. It's organic, thick, oozing with sweetness and deliciousness, reminding you to surrender to the pleasure and the beauty that is yourself and your relationships and life. Check it out. It's very cute, printed on the front and the back. You can find it on my website, barbiejeanxo.com, and this supports me and my work and every episode and this channel and this podcast. So I really appreciate your support. Thank you. Welcome to Sweet Release Podcast with me, Barbie Jean. Hi, sweets. Welcome back. I'm Barbie Jean, your host. And today on Sweet Release, we have a fabulous guest. I'm very excited to get to know you more, Mr. Court Vox, which Hello. Is a powerful name. I love your name. You've launched your own like coaching platform, your own business. You do like special retreats for men, and you just have this energetic presence that drew me to you initially. You're very mindful and do a lot with somatic healing. And I'm just kind of excited to learn more about you and what you do, but also kind of what got you to where you are.
Sweet. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know. Where do you want to begin?
Yeah. So thanks for being here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to kind of start with like, what were you like when you were a kid and kind of what brought you into kind of this confidence presence now? Was there like a switch for you into being more confident?
I mean, as a kid, I think, you know, just like what I'm doing now, I grew up in a really open household. I remember coming home from school and my mom saying like, naked tootie time. And my sister and I would take off our clothes and run around the house naked. And there was just a lot of freedom with our bodies. And my mom always talked about sex, and she always talked about masturbation. And it was sort of like, you know, she never shamed us for it. She'd always say something like, you know, it's okay to do that, but you need to go to your room in your own space. And so, you know, sexuality has always been something that has been open and free for me in those ways, specifically with my mom. And, you know, I think it's parlayed into what I do now, in that I think that the body is so fascinating, especially the erotic body, and what it's capable of doing and the pleasure that it's, that it allows us to have. And so I think that was a big part of my kind of like, you know, starting really young into where I am now.
Yeah. It's so special when you have a support system that is so open and vulnerable with you. And I think that's something that a lot of us don't have initially. And so when you're starting to like discover your body, it's like, oh, what am I doing? And you have to like learn with media and friends. Yeah. And that's just not the best way to do it. So that's nice to hear that your mom and you just have one sister. So it's just the two of you.
My sister passed 3 years ago, but yeah, it was just the two of us.
So sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
So was there just this constant like love in your house growing up? Did it always feel like you were supported for expressing yourself?
You know what? For the most part, when I turned 7, my parents got divorced and things sort of shifted and changed. You know, there was like the conversations around body kind of shifted because I had a stepmother who was very fit and very thin, and my mother was a more voluptuous kind of full-figured woman. And the dieting on both sides was really prevalent, but for very different reasons and in different ways. And the way that it affected my sister was actually really heavy of, you know, the necessity to be thin. Like that was the beauty standard that was projected, was to be thin. And that kind of trickled down into me, but in different ways. We always had like muscle magazines in my dad's house and fitness magazines. And so like, you know, when we talk about kind of body image issues for men and women, anorexia for men actually looks like bigorexia. like wanting to be bigger, to be more visible in the world, where women tend to like whittle down and be thin, and that's how they receive attention. And so, you know, from that age to probably about, you know, when I started going through puberty and had this huge growth spurt, probably like 6 inches over the span of a year, you know, my body really changed, and I kind of came out of that period and started to have a little bit more ownership and autonomy of my body. Yeah.
And was your first like sexual experience, were you scared or were you ready? What was that like?
You know, I think back on my first sexual experience, I was 4 years old. My neighbor, who was also four, he and I used to go on the side of my house and give each other blowjobs.
Really? At four?
Yeah. And we used to have, I remember we had orgasm. We didn't have ejaculation, but we would say things like, oh, I'm almost there. I almost got a tickle. And I just remember that being really playful and fun and curious. There was, you know, I think that that's something that people need to recognize about kids, is that kids are exploring and mm-hmm. curious, and they're excited and wondrous about their bodies and other kids' bodies. And so, you know, that oftentimes we as parents, we as adults, we adultify those experiences as something that it's not. And so I think, you know, if you do have kids, it's important to remember that they're curious about their body and to like set boundaries of like how to keep them safe in that, but also like encourage them to be curious about their own body and, you know, how to ask, how to be curious about other people's bodies and other kids' bodies. But I think that, you know, we put so much of our adult overlay over top of it to give it context that's not there.
Yeah, that's well said. And I think a lot of what I started diving into when I moved to LA was like play parties and in my sexuality. And it felt so like playful and fun. And I mm-hmm. think sometimes when we're like adulting, like you're calling it, or putting that overlay on people, it's like, don't forget about that childhood, like mm-hmm. innocence and that playfulness that you can bring into these adult experiences. Did you explore?
Can I say something about that?
Oh, yeah, actually? Please.
You know, I feel like, you know, as myself now, I have different parts of myself that definitely come out in different aspects of my sexuality and eroticism and just myself as a human. And I would say one of the most valuable parts of me is that like 4 to 6 year old, which is I was just such a joy and everything was so magical. And I loved to dance and to move and to sing. And I was like a joyful human being. Until, you know, people started to shit on my joy. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, you know, started to realize I was different than everybody else. And, you know, some people would celebrate me for that and other people would, again, shit on it. So, you know, I think it's important to like recognize these aspects of ourselves and sometimes to be able to go back to that childlike part of ourselves and go, what would he do? What would she do? How would she respond to this? Like, how can I embody more of that part of myself in order to invite more curiosity, more play, more experimentation?
Yeah, I feel like that's a big tool in like therapy and coaching. Is that something you kind of try to illuminate in people's lives and help them see?
Yeah. And, you know, I'm working predominantly with people exploring their erotic body and their eroticism. And you know, sex gets such a serious rap all the time. And, you know, it's really just adult play. Mm-hmm. And if we could take some of the kind of seriousness out of it, it takes some of the weight away. Right. And so if we could just learn to play and again, be experimental, you know, speak what we want, you know, just going back to when I was a kid, like I would just say what I wanted. And, you know, if I got a no, then it was a no. But, you know, to be able to speak desire, to be able to move into ways and things that might feel, you know, a little yellow or uncomfortable, but do it in a playful way. I think those are skills that a lot of people don't have. Mm-hmm. They've been cultured out of us. And also we're not taught how to think about sex and eroticism as a form of play.
Yeah. And do you feel like you've like learned a lot more about sex, like in your adult life than you have in like, even in your 20s and stuff? Like, do you feel like it's just constantly evolving and you're constantly growing in that space?
Yeah. I mean, I do this for a living. I do it for my work. And so, you know, as a practitioner in this realm, it's really important that I continue to kind of go back down the mountain and climb back up again and find new ways to honor my own body and my own eroticism, my own self. Because so much of the time I'm guiding other people into the exploration and discovery of their own. And so as a provider in this kind of space, it really is important to do a lot of self-care and a lot of, exploration of my own. I don't know if I answered that question.
No, you did. Well, I just think we should always all be evolving and growing. And I think like that's a good point that you brought up earlier and how, you know, sometimes we unlearn some of those ways that we used to communicate when we were younger with no being like more fearless and less worried about what people might say or the judgment or the shame that comes along with life as we age. And so I think it's like a good reminder to always just be growing and evolving and learning more and more so you can just feel more confident in yourself.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we stop evolving, we stop growing, we are kind of stagnant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a, you know, it's like, are you stagnant or are you content? And, you know, there's a really fine line there of I'm stuck or I'm so happy with what I have. I'm good. Right. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, me personally, I think when I stop growing, I feel stagnant. And simultaneously, when I am in growth, when I am in exploration, I feel sated. So I feel full in a way that it's not like I'm seeking more because I don't have. It's like I do feel full and I would like to know what's next.
Yeah. Speaking of what's next, I would love to ask you if you're comfortable sharing kind of, I know you are very open and vulnerable about like the kink community being a big part of your journey. Is there any, could you like elaborate more on that? Or if there's any specific kinks that you're comfortable opening up about that has helped you grow?
Yeah. I mean, the one that is just such a joy for me is rope. Mm-hmm. I love rope bondage. You know, just tying on floor, tying as a way of incorporating movement and connection, using rope as suspension. There's just so much to do with it. And what I love is like, there's such a fear around it. And then when people see it or they experience it, they're hooked. Mm-hmm. It's like, ooh, that is not what I thought it was. That was so delicious and fun. And I, you know, just had so much fun with it and it was sexy. The sensation of the rope on my body felt incredible, you know, to be able to play with resistance in it, to be able to surrender to rope. Mm-hmm. So, you know, rope has really become like an extension of my spirit, of my hands, a way to connect in a different way. And I feel like there's still so much to learn.
Oh, yeah.
It's like never ending.
Are you on both sides, like rigging and being tied both?
I mostly rig. Okay. I have to say I haven't been tied very much. I'm still waiting for that right person to surrender to that with. Yeah. But I enjoy tying a lot.
Cool. Yeah. I started off my journey with rope as always being tied up. Mm. And then in the last few years, I started tying more and I went to a class and kind of learned how to tie and did my own little workshop for some like a little couples retreat. And that was really cool. Just some introductory knots. But it's fun to like flow on that side. And as coming from like being the more submissive energy too, to kind of like learn what I like and the sensations that I enjoy and just kind of bring it to my friends and stuff on the other side.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful art.
For sure. And I think, you know, a lot of people think it's so complicated, but if you know a single column tie, double column tie, and you understand cross tension, there's so much creativity that you can have with it. You know, I think there's a couple of schools of thought. One is like, I have to make this look really pretty. And, you know, I think that's wonderful, but it's not always the most fun for the person receiving when you're kind of like trying to get all the knots right and making it look perfect. So I tend to tie for experience rather than beauty.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a different, I'm not having things photographed and things like that. So,
but the beauty still lies in the rope on the skin anyway.
So it's feeling. Like it's still I'm focused on the feeling, like the feeling being beautiful and sexy, not, you know, the visual. Cause I mean, if I'm telling you, you can't see unless I show you a mirror anyway, but it's more about what's the feeling inside. Yeah.
Is that something you've done in your retreats and stuff as well? Or do you focus more on like energy and body and all that?
No, my retreats are pretty unique. So my retreats are specifically for GBTQ men. And we offer something that nobody else offers in the market, which is we offer one-on-one 90-minute sessions with a certified sexological body worker, sexologist, for 3 out of the 6 days. So not only are you getting group activities and workshops and erotic experiences, but you're also meeting with somebody who knows what they're doing every day and supporting you in exploring your body. And sexological body work and somatic sex education really focus on breath, movement, sound, choice and voice, and placement of awareness. Mm. So choice and voice is a big one because it's being able to identify what you like, what you want, and then being able to speak it. I have this desire. I would like. And for so many people, that's so difficult to do. And I'll even say, you know, somebody that does this, I still find myself going, why can't I just say it? Why can't I just ask for a little bit to the left because that would be better than this right now? Or, you know what I'm saying? Just like making small adjustments. And then the dialogue comes into, I don't want to hurt their feelings or this is good enough. Or, and so, you know, these kind of dialogues around using voice in erotic space have trickle effect or rather they're connected to how we operate in the world. Right. And so when we can start to really identify what we want and ask for it specifically in sexual and erotic spaces, it does trickle out into so many aspects of our lives. And I see that over and over again, not with myself, but with clients as well.
Mm-hmm. No, it's so, such an important part of it. And I do all these AMAs and these confession episodes and people, you know, reaching out to me all the time and they're so fearful to use their voice in their relationships. And so I can imagine that being just like such a key part to just feel comfortable doing it in this safe space. And then, like you said, trickling it into your relationships and yourself and start feeling more confident being like, yo, I want to experience this type of relationship, or I want to experience this kink. And it's so hard for people to do. So I love that your work focuses on that voice part. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that, you know, people in relationship, I've been talking a lot about this recently. It's interesting. People in relationship have a different layer of risk involved in sharing these types of things. So, you know, when people come to me, it's like, I'm like, you know, whatever, share what you want. Like, it's not going to rock me, right? Everything has been shared with me. And I come from really a place of curiosity instead of judgment. And that's not always the case with our partners, right? Sometimes, you know, based on historical events, you go, this is going to not go over well. So I'm just going to keep it inside, push it down, keep it inside. And, you know, it ends up coming out in leaky ways anyway, right? So I would say to people in couple dynamics that there is a lot at risk when you're sharing something that feels so vulnerable and so deep that you might get shut off or worse, you might get thrown out of the house, you know? So there is stuff at risk, like you're sharing a life together, you share social circles and friends. A lot of times wealth is shared. So sharing intimate things can feel really vulnerable because what's at stake is really high.
Yeah, that makes sense. What would you tell people to, like, I always kind of encourage, you know, little baby steps and realizing that even though it is scary and there is some risk, like a lot of people really do grow and learn to like love you and accept you for who you are. If you're kind of like giving it to them in little like doses and baby steps and not saying like, hey, I have this specific fetish, maybe leaning in and saying, hey, I might be interested in exploring a threesome, you know, how does that make you feel? And then maybe leaning into like, oh, I'm actually, you know, leaning into the more kinky stuff, I guess. Mm-hmm. How would you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing is having an understanding of who you are in this space before getting into a relationship is really valuable.
True.
You know, a lot of people prioritize everything else and they are like kind of good to go with the sex that's offered. And we kind of keep some of these things, you know, the more kinky parts of ourselves kind of hidden because it's like, I don't know that this is going to be wanted or desired or liked. And so it's sort of like we're presenting something that's not real in the first place. And so being upfront, you know, with this is just as important as like being upfront with where your finances are and being upfront with the fact that you want to have kids or not have want to have kids. Like these are important things to go into relationship with. I'd also say that people evolve, right? People's likes and dislikes change and their bodies change, right? We are evolutionary beings. We cellularly are different every 7 years, completely different bodies. And so to expect our sexuality to be the same over and over again, year after year, is just sort of like, huh? Doesn't add up. So to be able to continue to check in with a partner on a more regular basis, you know, so that it's not this like huge window of time that goes by where you're like, I'm just not interested in this anymore because it's not hitting a specific box for me or boxes, or we've been kind of doing the same thing over and over again. And so I just rather starve. Mm-hmm. And then all this time goes by and then you've developed all these new things and it's going to feel a little jolting to come back to that partner after a year or 2 years and go, hey, I'm really into DS and I want you to dominate me. It's like, what? Where did that come from? So, yeah, I think kind of having consistency around discussion as well as not just verbal discussion, but somatic interaction with each other. And that's not always penetrative sex, but it's using your body to have language with each other through affection, through erotic touch that may not lead to sex. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these aspects are really valuable into creating, you know, to creating valuable partnership. Mm-hmm. You know, long-term partnership is just long. It's like this quote from Jamie Lee Curtis. She was on a red carpet and they asked her, what is the secret to your long-term marriage? And she said, we stayed. And it was that reporter was kind of like stumped, but it was like, yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. Long-term marriage, we stayed. It wasn't the success of your excellent marriage or your happy marriage or your, you know, happy sex life. It was, what was the thing that kept you in this long-term marriage? Yeah, we just stayed.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Love her. I'm curious, you know, in the space of kink and even coaching and like the somatic kind of moments that you're talking about, has there ever been something that has come up for you that has helped you heal through experiences? Or, you know, I talk a lot about how, you know, energy and kink and so much and pleasure, self-pleasure can really be a healing experience and can let out energy sometimes. Have you experienced anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said about somatic approach to all kinds of things, but I do have my teaching partner and I, we oftentimes will settle things with a somatic approach. So if there's a lot of tension between us, sometimes the words just are not applicable or just not going to work. And so like having a wrestle or even like spanking, you know, I like to spank. She likes to be spanked. And so like to kind of dissolve some of the energy, it's like, let's just go to something that works from a somatic perspective and then be done with it. Mm-hmm. Instead of it letting it be fester and having it this thing that we have to like have so many words around. Like we both know what the fuck up was. We don't need to talk about it. I know, they know. Like, let's just have it out.
Yeah.
In a way that like meets both of a need for us to move forward.
Yeah. Sometimes you just have to have that expression together, and then it can, instead of a conversation, like it's nice to have all of the parts, you know, like that can just add to the growth and evolving. I love that. I'm curious, you know, I've had a lot of listeners that men specifically that are like having these queer thoughts, or maybe they've been with women only. I had one guy reach out and it was like, I'd love if you could bring a more bisexual person that started exploring their bisexuality later in life on the pod, and just like how to make these men feel more confident in their queer thoughts, in their expressing themselves. Do you have any advice for that?
Yeah. I mean, mine kind of went the other way. I am gay and I'm also pansexual. And so, and I work with 50% of my clientele is cis straight women. And I sort of had this realization when I was studying, I had a lot of workshops that I was taking with, women. The majority of the attendees were women. And so I had this curiosity of like, do I enjoy touching women's bodies? Could I enjoy being with women's hands? And what transpired was there was a sharing in one of them, which was there was a lot of queer women in the space. And they were sharing that they really did not have any desire to be with cis straight men, and that they really preferred queer men. And it was sort of this light bulb that went off of, oh, I can be with all kinds of bodies and genders and sexual expressions and show up as myself. I don't need to like hide that. It's actually wanted. Like who I am and how I express is wanted from this these people. And so that was very liberating and freeing to be able to explore my bisexuality, to be able to explore my pansexuality. But what I would say is, you know, it is a little bit scary. I definitely have not been met from the gay community very kindly either.
There's still judgment there.
There's judgment of like, how could you? That's gross. It's disgusting. And what's wrong with you? And not everyone, but a lot. And I think it goes the other way too, with straight men kind of sharing with women of, you know, I have a curiosity to be being with men. And instead of, you know, women being curious of, tell me more. How would that look? What is the desire? Maybe we can like play with it in fantasy for a minute. Is it something that you feel like acting out on, or is it something that is like really rooted in like an imagination piece, which it might be just something that it's hot for you in fantasy. But I think, you know, it's not just the people sharing. It's like, who's also receiving the information. And if we could receive the information with curiosity instead of judgment and from a place of trigger, which we go to our own stories, we go to, oh, well, he's gay now, he's going to leave me. And this has just been a ruse this whole time. And, you know, that's their story. He's just sharing a fantasy. He's just sharing a desire. And, you know, it oftentimes doesn't go the same as when women share their bisexual fantasies, because we live in a patriarchal society where misogyny is really at the height of the time that we're living in. And so really, when we think about women on women, it's really through the lens of the masculine, of men. Right. All the queer or lesbian porn, for example, it's not for women. It's for men. You know, if I talk to my lesbian friends, they're like, I can't watch lesbian porn. I don't see myself in there. I actually see myself more in gay porn.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you want to like have a really interesting gander, go to Pornhub.com's analytics. They publish it every year. Just type in Google Pornhub Analytics 2024. And you'll see what's trending. You'll see the top porn stars. You'll see what types of porn are trending by region in the US, by country in the world, new kind of porn genres that have popped up for that year. It's really interesting because it maps to society, it maps to culture. For example, one of the top trending things of last year was trans porn. And transness is such a hot topic in our country. It was like polarizing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be 1% of the population and so targeted, and then to see that so many people are searching for trans porn, it's sort of like the shadow piece of it's not allowed here in culture. But on the other side of the erotic mirror, in the shadow space, I'm curious about it. I want to know. I'm interested in it. It actually turns me on. Mm-hmm. And when I show up back in cultural space, I am showing up with a level of shame. And so I have to poo-poo it or shit on it or put people down for it because it's my own shame that I haven't dealt with. And that is so much a part of my work, is alchemizing shame into pleasure, because you cannot find full access to pleasure in your body when you are trying to diminish others. You know, and that really comes, you know, the work that I do with women. It's sort of like the men in their lives want all the stuff, and many of them have access through wealth and power. And then when it's time for their women to explore, it's sort of like there's a double standard that lives there. So I think, you know, again, it's recognizing, you know, I would like for everyone to be in their pleasure bodies, mm-hmm. and have access to their bodies. Like this stuff, as much as I try not to be political, it's become so political. And so if you think, you know, you want to have access to full pleasure in your body, and you're trying to diminish access to other people's bodies, it's not going to happen for you. And it's definitely not going to happen for the people that you're with if you're constantly showing them and telling them that they don't matter.
Yeah, so well said. And there's so much I want to respond to, and I don't know where to begin. The main thing towards the end of your point is that it is unfair that these topics have become political, and it's upsetting. But you're right that the people that are doing that, or the energy that is making it that way, or even just like not being the compassionate, authentic self that you are, and putting this like hate and this judgment and this just, I don't even know how to say it. It's just, that's not going to make you be in your full pleasure body, like you said. And I think that's like the key there that you said at the end, was just, that's how you own your sexual power. And that's how you become the most raw and real and beautiful magic being that we are, is when you're just accepting all of yourself, but also accepting all of everyone else too.
Yeah. And look, it's not that you have to participate in everyone's desire, mm-hmm. right? If your partner comes to you and says, I want X, and you're like, whew, that's a real stretch for me. You know, the answer might be, I love that for you. I want that for you. And I don't think I'm ready to step into that. I maybe need some more time. I don't know if I'm ever going to be ready for that. And maybe we can find some ways, other ways to play with like what's underneath that. In a way that I could show up for you, or maybe like you choose to go play with that with somebody else.
Yeah. I think that's a great approach to those conversations when you are feeling like discomfort or it's not feeling right for you yet. Like, don't feel pressure to do what your partner enjoys. I know for me and my partner, we've been together 5.5 years now. And for a couple years, we were only dating women and experiencing with women, and we went to a couple play parties, but the majority of our exploration was like these were just like dating women on the side. And I remember the first time I was like, you know what, maybe like, what are your thoughts on us like experiencing a couple or a guy? And initially it was like, you know what, I'm not ready for that, but I will be. And I think I just need to like imagine it a few times and like get to that point where it's not like it's going to be tough, but like, I want to do that for you. I want to experience that for you. And now it has happened. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, sometimes you just have to continue, like we were talking about in the beginning, is like having this consistent conversation to allow your partner to like open up or yeah, let you be free and maybe experience that not together.
Yeah. And I think there was something interesting that you said, which was, I would do it for you. And like, I think there's so many aspects of relationship that it's like, it's not really my thing, but I fucking love you.
Yeah.
And I'll try.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes when we step into the ring, whether it's a ring we are afraid to be in or want to be in, but we step in with willingness and love for our partner, sometimes we find something that we didn't expect, right? We find, oh, I really do like kink play, or I really do like flogging. I really do like power play. I really do like rope. Never thought. Right. And it's sort of like, we don't know what we don't know. And I hear this often with couples, is there's one person usually driving or pushing or kind of inviting. And the other one is sort of like, okay, all right. You know, and then I think there are couples too that like continue to invite back and forth with each other. And this is where like real kind of magic starts to happen, is like, okay, I see you inviting me. I want to invite you to something. This is my experience. Will you say yes? Will you try with me? You know, that's like a really dynamic part of coupledom, is like when two people or three people or whatever, however many people are in your pod, start to express desire with each other and meet each other in ways that is only possible with one another.
Yeah. When you open up too, it makes your partner want to open up more. And I like that idea of like, keep inviting things back and forth if it feels good. Yeah. And that's just going to lead to more exploration and just more fun, which leads to those long lasting, valuable relationships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you been in your current relationship for a while, or is it recent?
Right now I'm single.
Oh, you're single. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, can I take some water really quick?
Oh, please. Yeah. Do your thing. Yeah. You can chat.
And then I'll answer this question.
Yeah. I was single for many, many years when I moved to LA, when I was abroad. I mean, I had the several lovers throughout, but that singlehood is something else.
Yeah. So I was in a relationship for 7 years. And before that for 5. And then before that 3. And so I've always been in really long-term relationships. And, you know, I am seeing somebody at the moment, and I'm really trying to be mindful about going into it differently than I have in the past. Kind of use all the tools that I have at my disposal that I didn't have in my previous relationships too. So I'm really being mindful of where I'm at and specific at this point in my life. And I travel a lot. And so really kind of honoring where I am in my path at the moment. And, you know, not wanting to commit to something that I can't fully show up for yet.
Yeah, that's a good mindset to have. I think a lot of us too, maybe when we're not as evolved or not as aware, you kind of just like jump into something when you don't feel like fully yourself or fully even ready to give. And then that's when boundaries get crossed and it just doesn't feel good. So I think that's a good place to be.
I think so too. It feels right for now.
I love it. And as far as your business goes, do you want to tell my sweets kind of where they could find you if they're curious about some of your retreats that you host or any of your other work?
So you can find me online, thebodyvox.com. I have a lot of offerings. I work with clients one-on-one in private immersion. I also offer retreats and workshops throughout the year for men, GBTQ men. And then I also work for Back to the Body, which offers retreats for cis straight women. And then I also have an online community, which is called the Body Vox Community. I have an online course, and we just have content kind of rolling on the platform, just all on sexuality and relationship, communication, all those kind of good things.
Yeah, you're doing the work. It's awesome.
I'm doing it.
Thank you for all that.
Yeah.
Well, I love to ask, you know, towards the end, when that last time you had that sweet release, if you're comfortable sharing with my audience any and all details. We love details, but no pressure.
Yeah. Oh, this feels vulnerable. So I, the guy that I'm seeing, it was Monday. No, what is today?
Tuesday.
Oh my gosh. I think it was Saturday then. Saturday, we had a little role play. I was saying that I was showing up my twin brother. And that was this very competitive twin brother. And we were identical. And it was fun. It was fun and playful. And there was a lot of banter of him saying, like, that because I showed up as my brother, that the brother was hotter and, you know, stronger. And I was like, oh, my brother doesn't like to hear that. So he's going to get you next time. He's going to have to prove his worth. And so it feels like there's like a to be continued aspect of where I show up as myself and kind of report back what my twin brother said about the experience.
That's fun. I'm imagining some Dom energy there.
Yeah. A lot of Dom energy there. Yeah.
That sounds fun.
So it was fun and long and just, yeah, super playful. And I love that.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of teasing and leading up and foreplay. And
that's a lot of texting.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Love it. Do you do a lot of that role play?
You know what? I can definitely show up in character. Mm-hmm. Fantasy is a big, I was a theater major. I was also a stage performer. I was a lead singer in a band for a long time. So I love like embodying different parts of myself. And I think role play allows for that, to step into something that maybe you haven't yet, to just play a role and like, see like, what aspect of myself can I find in there? But yeah, especially when I have a kind of a willing participant who will like meet me, I'm like, so game.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, so game. You could just say one word and I will dive in with you. But yeah, I like sort of like build up. I like tease. Mm-hmm. I'm not a quickie. If you want a quickie, you should look for somebody else.
That's not you.
Not me. I'm looking for long tail arousal.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. Well, that's what something I've love hearing too, is like that foreplay really isn't just like right before the sex. It's like an all day thing. You know, yeah. And it's like you really have to keep that energy between your lover throughout the day, whether it's texting or just being sweet in the morning before you depart from each other. Like that foreplay doesn't start in the bedroom. It's like all the time.
It's all the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think with role play specifically, I love it. I refer to it as like a callback. And so if like in the role play, you have a specific name or, you know, like a character name, it's easy to at some point come back and say, hey, it's me, twin brother Gage. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing right now? You know, it's like we already have a narrative. We have an experience that we shared. And so we don't have to build the world anymore. Like the world has been built and we just kind of pick up where we left off. And that to me is super sexy, to be able to have that kind of rapport with someone. And the fact that they will just pick up with me is like, oh, we got a player. I threw the ball. They caught it. We're playing. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, it could lead to the bedroom, but it doesn't necessarily have to. I think that's the difference for me between exchange of erotic energy and sex, is that I love the exchange of erotic energy, that like texting, the sexiness of like teasing, of even like, you know, spanking someone and letting that be like, okay, we're going to dinner now. Mm-hmm. And like it not ending in kind of penetration or not ending in everybody ejaculating or coming at the end. It's like, no, those things are like building tension, and tension is so fucking sexy.
Oh my God. You're so right. You're getting me excited. I love it. Thanks for sharing. I know, yeah, that's vulnerable sharing your recent story, but I appreciate that. And it's a good idea to use sweets too. Maybe try a little role play. I like that. Tapping back into it later on and just like always having that kind of narrative sounds like a really fun treat. I'm going to have to do that. Yeah. I'm going to have to do it.
Choose a character name for yourself.
Maybe a princess or something. There you go. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate your wisdom and you sharing your life a little bit with us. And I think my listeners are really going to resonate with a lot of what you said. So I'm happy to have you here.
Yeah. Thanks for the thoughtful questions.
Of course. Well, I guess you already kind of shared where you are. So is there any last minute thoughts you want to share with my sweets?
Yeah. You know, I think that the biggest question to ask yourself is, you know, if I had 1 year to live, like, what would I do? What would I share? Who would I want to be a part of that experience? And if you don't have the right players, you don't have the capacity to share your full self with the people around you, it's time to like do a little check-in, right? And also, like, where do you want to be? Like, what is it that you want to be doing? If you're not in like a 90-10 where 90% of your life is pretty fucking good and the other 10% is just you kind of working, then I would say like, it's time to take a look at how we can like move that up to 90%.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. Yeah. Just take a second, be mindful, be with yourself and reflect. Yeah. I love that. Well, thanks, sweets, for being here. And don't forget to be sweet, be here, reflect, and welcome the sweet releases. We'll see you next time. Thanks again, Court.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.